Nobby. How are you?
So good. I love talking to fellow Carolines. Do you get the like Carolyn all the time? Do people call you Carolyn?
All the time. People are like, is it Carolyn or Caroline? And I don't really understand because Carolyn is just clearly YN, right? Yeah, it's so obviously YN. So if it's INE, I don't understand why that's confusing to people, but people always say, is it Carolyn or Caroline?
I know, and we have the word line in our name. I'm like, it's actually the word
line. I know. I know, I'm with you. But yes, I do get that a lot.
But do you also love being a Caroline?
I do. I like the name Caroline. And actually, we just played Fenway 10 days ago, and we played Sweet Caroline. And I love that song.
I do, too.
I mean, I know it's very cliche, but it's cliche for a reason. It's such a great lyric and beautiful song. And I actually love Neil Diamond, so.
Oh, yeah. I feel like Caroline, it's like a common name, but it's not a common name. There's a lot of us, but I also feel like we're sparse. No, I don't feel like there's an overwhelming amount of Carolines out there, but it's not like a weird name, you know?
Yeah, I like it. I'm used to it. What can I say?
What's your nicknames? What do people call you for a nickname?
CJ.
CJ.
Caroline Jones. Yeah.
Forever? CJ. You've always been CJ?
I think so. Yeah, I think I've always been CJ. And then my fiance calls me Barbaraline.
Barbaraline. Barbaraline.
Yeah, like a barbarian, but Barbaraline.
Do you find that sexy?
I wouldn't say I find it endearing. I don't know about sexy. He's mostly poking fun at me.
Is that like, what does that mean? Is it because you're just so active and like you can really just rock it?
I suppose I can be a little bit abrasive or blunt. I can be very honest in a way that maybe people aren't used to. And I don't know, I guess I'm unique in certain ways that other people find funny or bizarre.
Can you elaborate? This is so interesting.
Well, I guess I'm trying to think how it started. He probably called me Barbaraline. Yeah, the way, like, some examples would be if I'm not that into a party or a social setting, like, I just tend to, like, up and leave or something like that. It doesn't occur to me that that's not right. That's not normal.
You're like the queen of the hillbilly slit.
What?
You're the queen of the hillbilly slit.
I am a little bit, yeah. And I used to just do it when I was single. I used to just do it and not even think twice. And then when I have someone with me now, he's like, what the heck? Like, just things like that. He started calling me Barbaraline. And I think the way that I eat, sometimes I just I'll shovel things in like a barbarian.
So when your shows up, you are like hit after it. Like, it is like game on.
Sorry, wait, repeat your question.
When your food shows up, is it like game on?
If I'm hungry, yeah, I'm very protective of it. And also I get very hangry. So if I'm very hangry, I think he just calls me a Barbaraline because I can be very tough. I can be a little bit abrasive, which is funny because I feel like my music is not necessarily like that.
No, really not.
I think I'm a very independent minded, fiery person. And I also think when you start to run your own business, like as an independent artist, you have to become a bit like that and develop your strength that way. So, but sometimes it's misplaced. That's where the humor of it comes in, is sometimes like that fire is misplaced and people are like, whoa.
So that does make sense. So you have been you're signed to Jimmy Buffett's label, right? Or you were, or you are?
Yeah, I have a distribution deal with him. So he distributes my music, but we have a deal where I actually own all my music and have all the creative control over it, which I'm really lucky to have. I know that most artists don't have that luxury, but I've been working with my business partner and manager and co-producer, Rick Wake, now for about 5 years. And we have a really...
He's done some big names, like Mariah Carey, Celine Dion. That's kind of huge.
Yeah. Just some up-and-comers. Yeah, he worked at Sony in the 90s and 2000s and helped discover Mariah. He worked with Whitney Houston, Celine Dion. He's worked with, J-Lo, he did her first album. the whole kind of Latin explosion with Shakira and Marc Anthony and everyone, Ricky Martin at that time. So he has a lot of experience across a lot of different genres of music, including country, and Trisha Yearwood and folks like that. And I met him about 5 years ago when we started working together and just have built this career and this body of work that we're still working on. I have an album coming out later this fall. And I'm just really proud of what we're building. He really believes in me as an artist and my vision for my career for myself. And he's kind of my ride or die, my right-hand man.
Okay, so how did you get started? And did you always want to be an independent artist? Because you grew up in like New York and up north. And yeah. How did you find country music? You play like 7 instruments, right? Am I missing? Like, is it like you guitar, dobro, mandolin, harmonica? I mean,
you're correct. Yeah, I don't play mandolin, but I do play quite a few instruments. I want to play mandolin. I think that's such a cool instrument, and I've recently gotten more into bluegrass living in New Zealand and collaborating with a bluegrass band there, and then now being with Zach Brown Band, they actually have a lot of bluegrass influence. But to go back to the origin of your question, I grew up in the Northeast. I did not grow up to listening to country music at all. I grew up listening to a lot of classic rock, soul, R&B, the divas of the 90s. I grew up listening to Mariah Carey and Whitney Houston and Barbra Streisand. And then when I started writing songs really young and writing poems and stories. I was just an obsessive writer. And I would write these poems and stories. And as soon as I realized that I could put those poems and stories to music and make songs, I was like, this is it for me at a very young age. And so I was, making some demos up in New York, kind of like in the summers in between school years. And my manager at the time, I got a manager when I was around like 16, 17, who was setting me up with a producer up north. And he said, you know, there's some country singer songwriter influence in your music. And I was like, what? And he was like, yeah. And literally the extent of country music I knew was like some George Strait and then Faith Hill and Shania Twain. Cause every 90s kid knew Faith Hill and Shania Twain. Right. And he was like, and you know what? Country is kind of the last genre left that really like prizes the things that you're into, like songwriting and musicianship and being authentic and having artistic integrity. And even at a young age, I felt like I was on a vision quest towards all those values in my music. And he was like, you know, pop music just isn't as centered around that community and those values. And so I went down to Nashville when I was 17. I went to a show at the Bluebird Cafe, and it was a totally life-changing experience for me. I just felt like I'd been struck by lightning. I felt like I'd found the missing piece of my artistry. I just had no idea that there was an entire genre of music and community of people like-minded in those musical values, like in authenticity and the stories behind the songs. Cause I had loved like Jewel and Bob Dylan and Joni Mitchell and VH1 Storytellers. And I was into that whole like folk singer songwriter thing. But the fact that there was a whole modern commercial genre of music that still had roots in those values, but had all the bells and whistles of modern commercial music, which is country music, was really, really exciting to me. And so when I went to that show at the Bluebird, I became obsessed, and I went all the way back to like Hank Williams and Jimmy Rogers and the Carter family, like starting in the 40s. And I just listened to all the country music ever. And I mean, I don't want to say nobody tests me. I haven't listened to all the country music ever, but I did listen to all the major artists over all the decades of country music and just fell in love with it and fell in love with the lineage and the stories and the history of it and the richness of it, and love that it's a genre that has been built and pioneered by real rebels and renegades and people with different sounds. Like if you go back, and we think of it as such a traditional, conventional genre, but like, there was nothing traditional or conventional about Willie Nelson or the Carter family or Hank Williams or Johnny Cash, like, or Dolly Parton. Like, these are total trailblazing rebels. And I love that. And there's just so much artistic courage that has built this genre. And so over the years, country just like bled its way into my songwriting. And I'm not traditional country by any stretch, but I love country music. And I feel like it was the missing piece of me finding my sound.
So then what happened? You fall in love. You're at the Bluebird. You obsess. You learn all the stuff about everything. Country music. And then what's next?
So then,
that leads you to, I can't believe right now. It is so cool that you are on tour with Zach Brown, but you're like on tour with him, with his band. Like, it's like you and Zach Brown. It's not like you're opening for Zach Brown. It's like you are on stage with Zach Brown and the Zach Brown band performing and singing. I mean, that is so badass.
It is so cool. Even when you say it, I'm like, dang.
It's just so wild. I love hearing people's journeys. How did this scenario happen? Like, what a crazy, awesome opportunity for life. You know?
It really is. Well, quite a few things happened before this. but I started writing and working with writers and producers in Nashville in my late teens. And I just worshiped the songwriters in Nashville and the musicians in Nashville and the producers. Like, they're my musical heroes. But I realized at a really young age that if you don't really know who you are, it's tough to sound like yourself when you get in those rooms, because those writers and producers are so well practiced in creating commercial country music that it can be tempting to just
roll with what's working, what's happening.
Yeah, and to become kind of like a carbon copy of what's going on and kind of a paint by numbers artist. And at a young age, I wanted to be the producer. You know, I wanted to be as good, or not be the producer necessarily, even though I do co-produce now, but I wanted to hold my own musically and not just be like a pretty girl who sang. You know, I wanted to be a great musician. I wanted to be a truly great songwriter and a great producer. And I recognized how big the chasm was between like my experience level and my skill level and theirs. And so I just like fully committed to writing and producing my own records for a while in New York and touring around. I would book my own tours at these like high schools and colleges and boarding schools for a few years. And I really spent my early 20s just like hand making my albums. I had no manager, no marketing team, nothing, like no one but me. And spent my early 20s touring around schools and trying to get my feet wet playing live and learning how to produce my own records, and total trial by fire, and probably took a lot longer than it would have if someone was showing me how to do it. But
your own devices, which was good, and you got to do it your own way, because maybe, like you said, someone else could have tried to influence you and you knew you didn't want that.
Well, that's what ends up happening for good reason, because those people are super experienced and super talented. I just always wanted to have a voice and be able to hold my own. And I feel like you really have to pay your dues to be able to do that. And this was just my particular way of doing that. So after doing that for a few years, that's when I met Rick, and we made the album that would become Bare Feet. And he loved my sound. He loved my vision. He loved what I was doing. And I'd never had that before. I'd had people come on and say, oh, you're so talented, let's try this or this or this or this. But I've never had someone come in and say, I get what you're doing. I get who you are, what you're trying to become. And I want to help you make that vision happen and come to fruition. And that is really invaluable to find someone who believes in what you are trying to create, as opposed to someone who sees your potential and then wants to create you in their image or the vision that they have. And I would say like a little bit after my first single came out, a friend of a friend played it for Zach Brown.
Oh, okay. That's a good friend to have.
Yeah, exactly. And Zach just reached out to me. This was late 2016, early 2017.
And this was your album called which one?
Bare Feet. This was actually before Bare Feet was even out. I had a single and I think I had an EP out.
He got your album EP that you had produced yourself.
Yeah, that was my first EP that I produced with Rick Wake. So this was my first like official country pop release.
No, but I'm saying the one that Zac Brown got. Did he get the one before Bare Feet? So it was one that you had produced alone?
No, he got Bare Feet.
Got it.
And because The Highway was playing Tough Guys at the time, and I guess a friend of a friend had heard it and played it for him, and he reached out to me just totally unnecessarily, just being super hospitable and kind and warm. And it's also just a God thing. It's just one of those things you can't really explain rationally. And he reached out to me and said that he liked it. And if I needed help or, I remember he called me once and like Zac Brown came up on my phone for the first time. And I was
what?
I know. What? So this is
a total random happenstance that like Zac Brown is in your life.
It actually did happen pretty randomly. I mean, we did have that friend of a friend connection initially, but then all the events that followed that were, he did not have to do any of that. You know what I mean? So he asked me to come out and open two dates on his 2017 Welcome Home tour. And I thought I died and gone to heaven. And I came out that it was a weekend in June, and I came out and I'd never played for a crowd that big before. And I came out and played. And on the second night of the run, the last night of the run, he asked me to come up and sing a song with them on stage. And like I said, I'd never played for that many people before, let alone now I'm playing on stage with Zac Brown Band. And I can't really describe to people what it feels like when an actual dream comes true, like something that you've actually visualized in your mind and dreamed of, and then the actual moment is happening, and it's extremely surreal, and it gives you such a faith in
dreams.
Life, like how, yeah, and how beautiful life can be, like how literally if you, I mean, it all sounds so cliche and so cheesy, but it's cliche for a reason, because if you like hold a vision in your mind and just work towards it and just don't give up, and then you have those little moments along the way that you're like, oh my God, you know, it's so special.
What was the vision you were holding that came true? Was it to be with Zac Brown, or was it just to be like playing for that many people? Like what had you been holding in your mind? And are you big about like manifestation and visualizing, and like, what is your spiritual realm life like to like get you to these dreams?
Oh God, don't get me started on that. I know.
Oh, I love it. This is my favorite thing to talk about.
Everyone thinks I'm such a hippie, but I like to apply it practically. I think, okay, so to answer your question, I've always dreamed about playing in front of thousands and thousands of people. And specifically, I dreamed about having a career and mentors in a career that were artists. Where I could really grow myself as a songwriter, as an artist, like as an authentic artist of integrity that would have a long career. So the fact that I've been able to have mentors like Zac and Jimmy Buffett and Kenny, like people who have decades long careers, because that's what I want. I've never been about like quick fame or like the biggest radio song right away or any of that. Like I really want to build a fan base and a career and a body of work over the course of my life that fulfills me and is true to who I am as an artist and helps me grow as an artist and hopefully inspires an audience, you know? And I really believe that like in this time more than any other time, you will find your audience. Like if you have a unique sound and you're true to it and, you're 100% committed and authentic to that. Like you might not find the biggest audience, but like you will find your audience because of the internet in this day and age, like you just got to keep doing your thing. And I see it with so many inspiring artists now. So I had dreamed a lot about having artists take me under their wing. And I dreamed about being on a tour like Zac Brown's tour, opening up for a big artist for years before I got to do it. And so I think to answer your question, of course, visualization, I think, is a great tool. I just try to also leave things very open because I don't like trying to set too many specific high goals that get you too anxious and too obsessed with like how things work out externally. Because I just think there's so much you can't control. And you don't want to set your standard for yourself according to like how other people in the world perceives you, I think that's like a really slippery slope, especially in this industry. Because this industry is mostly focused on how other people perceive you. And I think that that's a real like trap for creativity. And it just kills creativity and it kills your humanity. And I see that that's a real problem for a lot of famous people. So I try to, yes, definitely like visualize and dream and all these things, but I try to just focus on putting one foot in front of the other, working really hard and being completely true to myself. And I think all that pays off.
So how do you know what your next step is? I always love people like you who are so in tune with like their guidance system from above and like trusting their gut and intuition. And clearly you have identified your dreams and talents and your drive and your passion at a young age. Like you have known what you wanted to do for a long time.
Yeah.
And like the more puzzles that pieces that you found, like the Bluebird and realizing it's country music, like you just dive farther and farther into your passion and curiosity, which I love because I feel like that's the soul guiding you. But how do you know when you have the green light to take that next step, when you are trusting? And I love what you said, holding it open, letting it, like having your visualization to what your heart and your soul is telling you that you want to do, but then like letting the pieces fall. I love that so much. Yeah. I relate to that. How do you know when it's time to make a move? Like, what does it feel like when you are all of a sudden like, oh my God, this is the next step. I feel it.
I think it feels like the most natural thing. Like, I think so many people just don't trust themselves and don't trust what feels good to them because we're not really taught in this culture that what feels good to you is right, you know, like, or that being happy and fulfilled is ultimately the goal. You know, we're taught that all these other trappings of success are the goal. So I think once you get really clear about your priorities, I think the next step is usually pretty obvious and natural. And I think it's only when I get my priorities out of order that I get confused and unsure of myself. Like when other people convince you that this should be your priority, this or you realize that you're living for this or this or this instead of your values. Like I think if you're really clear about your values and what you actually want, then you can go. And that's not to say that any external success trappings are wrong, because if that is your priority and that is your goal, then you just go straight ahead at that. And that has its own challenges too. But I think being clear, I think so many of us, especially women, are like so commonly second guessing ourselves, you know, and not trusting ourselves and not like really living for what's going to fulfill us. And then by extension, everyone around us.
So this is awesome that you know all this. How did you get this?
You're sweet.
How did you get this confidence? Have you gone to a lot of therapy to get this, or were you born into a family that like taught this, or was just this innately how you were? Like, how did you know this? And then what are your priorities? And like, what is your clarity that allows you to stay moving on this goal without like looking left to right and feeling like you might get lost in the trap of comparison or trying to live for what someone else wants or feeling like you have to? Like, how have you not gotten sidetracked by all of that and stayed clear on your priorities during your career? Because I'm sure there's a lot of chances that you could have tried to jump ship and like abandon the road you're on and kind of go more mainstream or, you know, do something that feels like it could be quicker to like success, but you have stayed so true. So like, what are your priorities and how did you learn these?
Well, I'm very stubborn for better and worse. Like worse, I don't want to sugarcoat it. Like it can also be really bad, not bad, but it can take you longer to learn things when you're as stubborn as I am. But lots of people are stubborn and you just have to know your way around that. I think I've always been a seeker. I was like a very spiritual, existential child. I was fascinated by, I mean, feelings are the currency of music and art. So I'm like a very deeply feeling sensitive, curious person. And I think when I was a teenager, I got really interested in psychology, spirituality, all these kind of things that we're talking about. To me, it's always been in lockstep with music too, because music, like songs, are about why we do the things we do and what people, how people behave and how people live and how people act in relationships. And all of it has to do with, at the core, with who we are and what our priorities are and what our choices are. And that stuff just has always fascinated me. So I'm just fascinated by like the human experience, and especially the feeling side of the human experience, like the emotion side of it. And so I think because of that, I'm just very aware, probably too self-aware and self-analytical. Again, all this is like a blessing and a curse. And then I think it just fascinates me. And so I want to optimize my mind, my body, my heart, my everything, so that I can, I mean, again, it sounds so cheesy, but like, we're only here once. Like, I want to have the best life I can have and be the most fulfilled and happy that I can be, and put the best music out in the world that I can put out. And so I just take all that really seriously. And I don't know, it's just a drive and a fascination for me, I think. And I pay a lot of attention to my inner world because of that, maybe too much. Like, it can be seen as very like selfish and self-centered, but I know a lot of artists kind of have that reputation sometimes. I think there is something in us that's like very introspective and introverted by nature. So sometimes actually trying to, like, my fiance is like the opposite of me. Like, he shows me the world, you know? And it's a good balance, because you couldn't have like a world full of introverted, introspective people.
So when you're walking around, you're just like in your world, like you're just, is that what you're saying? Like, you're just like thinking about like what you're processing it and through your lens, and like how this is affecting your priorities and long-term vision. Is that what you're kind of saying?
I think so. I think I'm probably more focused on the feeling side of things than everyone and everything that's always going on. I don't know really. It's kind of like trying to explain your own perception of things. It's very difficult. I just know that what I said about how I've kind of been like that since I was a kid, that's true for sure.
So when you wake up, what's going through your brain? Like, when you wake up in the morning, what is your checklist of things that you want to accomplish in that day?
Oh, that's a great question. I want to ask you the same thing too. But okay. So on a typical day, I will meditate in the morning. Love coffee. Coffee is not like a caffeine boost for me. It's like a way of life. It's literally like the most joyful thing ever to me. I love it so much. I love that ritual. I usually work out, or like, we're on tour right now, so I'll do some stretching. And if we're in a pretty place like this, we just went to like a hiking trail. And then, so I'll try to get outside and get sun, do a little sweat. It's really important on tour too. And then I'll do like brush up on some songs and stuff before the show, because Zac Brown, they change their set list every night. So I should also go back, because I never finished this part, but I ended up opening for Zac Brown for a few years after that. And I completely owe the career that I have to him, because being on that first big tour got me slots on Jimmy Buffett and Kenny Chesney and Faith Hill and Tim McGraw. Like, that just led to me being able to really start my live music career. But this year, after opening for Zac Brown on and off for the past 3 years, I'm actually a special guest in the band. So I'm not opening, I'm playing their set with them on stage. So I'm like a girl.
Such a huge salute to you as a musician, because those guys are no joke when it comes to like playing instruments and their musicianship and them as a band. And for him to like want to include you in his band means that you are a badass. Cause like, he's not gonna like babysit you. Like, you have to be able to carry your weight to hang with Zac Brown band. So that's like,
huge. Oh, I know.
I mean,
when I got that, he called me like out of the blue in June and asked
how did he even come up with this idea? Like, you know,
well, a few years ago they had Daryl Scott out. They've had special guests before.
Okay. So he's but done this with the band.
I do not think of myself on the same level as Daryl Scott, who's like a legend and just an incredible multi-instrumentalist, songwriter. But when it is not easy to shock me, Caroline. I was like, he was like, would you come out and play, you know, banjo and guitar and beat three and sing with us? And I was like, I just couldn't believe it. I was so excited. And since I'm so at the helm of my own career, it's such a cool, refreshing gig to have, like to be a cog in the wheel of someone else's, you know, band, and to really commit myself to learning their whole catalog. Like I had to learn 51 songs and because they change their set list every night. And to really dedicate myself to rhythm guitar playing, which is mostly what I'm doing in the show. And that's such a, like deceivingly simple thing, but like great acoustic rhythm guitar playing is, especially in a band like this, it's just been so fun to focus on that again. And it's just a blast. Like I feel so honored to be up there with them. I pinch myself every night. I had to learn B3. So I play keys. I'm really comfortable playing keys, but I'd never played the organ before. So I had to have like a crash course. Cause Zach was like, he's like, you play B3, right? And I'm like, no, but I will by August 5th. So I did like a crash course in B3 and that's been so cool. So it's just a great musical challenge. And I feel really lucky because I love musical challenges. Like all I want in life is to become a better musician, songwriter, like producer. So I just want to be a better artist. And so it's so cool that Zach has given me this opportunity.
And so what does that feel like? What is the feeling? Because you've obviously played for big crowds as Caroline Jones, as yourself, yeah. You've opened for big artists. What does it feel like to be feeling the feeling of a superstar artist? So like being on stage with Zach Brown, yeah. Being in this band, being an integral part of the show. How does that feel to feel that superstar energy coming at you from the audience? Is it different? Is it the same?
Well, you're right. It is different because there's a real like meeting of energy and expectation that you get when you're the person that everyone comes to see, you know, versus when you're an opener, you're really trying to win over the audience with your energy. And so it is different, but I've sat in with them over the years a bunch of times. So I know kind of what their whole setup and stages and what that feels like. But I will say it's really cool to not have to be the front man for once, because I really get to focus on the guitar playing and the singing and the harmonies and the rhythm section. Like there's so much going on. It's hard to explain for people who haven't ever performed before, but there's so much going on like in a band of that size of 9 people. There's just so much like musical richness and information that you could be listening to all the time. But even if the audience weren't there, you'd be all occupied, like your brain and your heart, your musical, like nerd brain and heart. And then there's 25,000 people out there and they're all having a similar but unique experiences. And you can watch, like the people watching is unbelievable. So it's actually so cool because when I'm performing as the front person, Caroline Jones, I'm thinking about my vocal, I'm thinking about performing, I'm thinking about playing, I'm thinking about leading the band, I'm thinking about all these things, but this is a totally different. Yeah, exactly. And so it's been really cool actually so far. I really enjoy it.
Were you nervous like that first night? And then y'all played Fenway Park. I mean, let's not forget that. And Zach, you played with Zach Brown when he had the most consecutive sold out nights in a row at Fenway, right? Weren't you on that tour?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're playing again. What is that like when that first time that you step on stage as a special performer, guest, band member for this tour? What did you feel like? Did you like, were you just like energized, butterflies flying out your ears? I mean, what was it like?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if it's experience or age. I feel like I'm more calm than I've ever been, which is really cool. Because I remember the first tour with Zach, like literally every night I felt it, just you can't explain what it's like being put in front of 10 or 15, 20,000 people, like, I felt like someone had put me, like, electrocuted me every night. Like, I would just go on stage because it was my first tour, and I would just literally, like, the entire show, I would just feel like, like, it's beyond adrenaline. I don't know how to explain it. And I remember when that wore off and I was like, oh my God, maybe that won't last forever. And it's just funny because, like, 4 years later, I feel so much calmer on stage. And probably less nervous than I have been, which I think is cool because maybe I'm becoming more confident or more able to go with the flow. I used to be very like, I have to have the set down, I have to have everything perfect, like judging every single thing. And there's a little bit of, in this gig, first of all, less of the weight is on you because you're not the front person. And then secondly, there's a degree to which you just have to let go because all those guys have so decades and decades more experience collectively than I do. And they might change their set list and they're going to hold my hand and take me along for the ride. And I just feel lucky that they kind of take care of me and take me under their wing. So it's actually been a really cool experience so far, but Fenway is always amazing. And I got to have some family and friends there. It was really special.
So out of every artist, obviously you are bad to the bone. You're so talented. You have such a vision and you deserve this spot and this opportunity more than anyone. But why do you think Zac Brown chose you to take you under his wing and develop you and bring you along and give you these experiences and really like mentor you as you said you dreamed of? Yeah. What do you think it was? What do you think was the reason he picked you?
Well, and actually Jimmy has been just as instrumental. Jimmy Buffett has done similarly. They really are. Well, I think to answer your first question, why he brought me out on this tour, gosh, it's a weird question to answer. I mean, obviously he thinks I can add something. Hopefully I'm adding a cool female harmony that they usually don't get up top. Hopefully just really my goal with this tour is just like super solid, consistent rhythm guitar playing, or if I play banjo or electric, that it's very solid and consistent, just like adds to the foundation of what they have, because they have so much virtuosity going on and their arrangements are so set in stone. So clearly he thinks I can add something, and I'm just trying to do that justice. And you know, it's cool to have female energy out there too, I think. And then Jimmy and Zach mentoring me, I think they probably feel how serious I am about it and how committed I am to not to like being famous or like globbing onto them for that reason, but like how much I genuinely care about this craft and like building a career this way and how much I admire them and respect them. Like I hope they, and I think probably they do feel that.
What is Zach like as a friend?
He's a very interesting man. Like he talk about a deep feeling person. He's like a very, very deep feeling person. Very, very smart, curious mind. Like super into different crafts, like knife making and hunting and fishing. And like he's a Renaissance man for sure. Very creative and very deep feeling person and very loyal person. Yeah.
What is Jimmy Buffett like as a friend?
Jimmy's like a big kid. He really is. Like he's like a 75-year-old he's a 75-year-old body, but I'd say like mentally, he's probably like a very wise, like 20-something-year-old. And he has such a brilliant business brain, like just a brilliant, I mean, clearly look at what he's done, but he has like a brilliant marketing brain, business brain, but it's somehow all very authentic to him. And that's very rare. Like it's very rare to have that kind of entrepreneurial spirit that is so genuine to you, you know?
At the same time, I'm still having such a fun, like seemingly carefree existence, you know, like he's figured out how to like have a great life in the midst of all this entertainment.
Well, that's what's funny.
Insanity.
That's what's funny is that he's like, that is his brand and that is who he is. So he just almost can't miss like any business idea that's associated with that. Everyone's like, I want some of that, you know, like give me what he's taking, whatever it is, you know, because it's infectious. And so he really is like super playful, but he's also like very deep in a different way than Zach. Like he's, he loves, how do I explain the difference? He's like a lighter hearted person than Zach. Zach's like super deep, serious person.
Mm-hmm.
And Jimmy's like very lighthearted, but he's also still a very deep feeling person. I haven't met an artist that's not like a deep feeling person, you know, by being married to one.
Yes. Yes. What about Kenny Chesney? Are you as close with him as you are with Jimmy and Zach?
Not quite, but I do still consider Kenny a good friend, and he's been so nice to me, and always checks in on me and so many other people. I mean, he's like a big brother and mentor to so many artists. That's something that I really admire about him. And being on his tour was an incredible experience. I've seen him a few times since then, and I would say Kenny is like just such a sweetheart. Like he's such a warm person. Like he makes everyone feel like they're the most important person to him. He's very, like, that's how I can differentiate him. He's like super warm and loving to everyone. Like effusive almost. And his stage presence, like his is, I've never seen anything like it. Like
what is it like? I've never been to one of his big arena shows.
It's just, I'd say I've only seen it live with when I saw you two. Like it's, he's just, his energy is so high, and he just, I don't know how he can, like, he brings the whole crowd's energy up, like way up. And most performers do that in one way or another, but Kenny's just always moving, and it's really cool to watch. It's very unique. It's, again, being an opener or being in a band is such a cool vantage point because you get to see like the little subtleties and subtle differences between all the performers. But Kenny's just high energy. That's the only way I can explain it.
How would you describe your music and your sound?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say my music is definitely country pop, like somewhere in that Venn diagram. But it has a lot of singer-songwriter influence. And I love pop production. I love like modern, I'm a real production nerd. So I love bringing some of those sounds in. And then I would say my songs kind of skirt the country singer songwriter pop line. And I have a bunch of influences. I think everyone in this day and age does, but I think that's probably the best descriptor.
When someone leaves your performance, your show, what do you hope that the feelings are that they take away with them are? What do you hope they leave with? When they've seen you play, what do you hope they say?
Oh, such a good, again, like that's so important to think about as an artist, you know? I hope that when people leave, they feel inspired, like truly inspired, like inspired to go do something that they want to do or have an idea, for themselves. Like music gives you, can give you such a sense of possibility. And I really hope that when people leave my show, they feel inspired and appreciative and, like excited about their own potential. That would be the ideal.
So after, like, I've watched a lot of your videos and like, I feel like I have a lot of like insight into your music and you as an artist, you seem to be super, well, and from talking to you, you're super committed to like learning, and you're real, it's like you take learning as a challenge that you can't wait to dive into. Whereas like with me, like all these things that you can't wait to learn, like the organ, and you've studied every single country music history, like that feels so daunting in my head, like so much work and so hard. But you're like, oh my God, I love this, it lights you up, you know?
Yes. I mean, sometimes it is daunting, and sometimes, again, I think this is where like knowing yourself and having your priorities in order is important. Cause I think, especially when you think about what other people know and have done, like, and start comparing yourself, I think that's when things get really daunting, where you're like, you set some standard or expectation of yourself based on other people's greatness or accomplishments or achievements, and then you start to feel really overwhelmed. But I think if you can just center yourself and go back to the love of it and the passion, the excitement of it, of being able to do X, Y, and Z, then you can have the energy and the motivation to just put one foot in front of the other and do the work. I think it was Jordan Peterson who had this really cool quote that he was talking about, like, the goal of life is not to win the game. It's to be asked to play, to be invited to play. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I heard recently that I was like, oh my God, that is actually so true. Cause it's not always about being the best. It's about like being invited to have these kind of experiences that make you better, because there really is no like destination. Like there's not like, especially in music, there's not like a best musician. There are people who in my mind, I think of as the best musicians. And then
but someone else is going to have different people that they thought were the best. You're so right. It's so subjective to your person.
And then you start like measuring yourself against that standard and how far away you are from that. And that's like a real energy killer. Like that's when things feel daunting and you feel like, oh, like I'm so far. Cause as soon as you start beating up on yourself, you have so much less mental space to be motivated and to actually go do some work. So the most important thing is to try to feel inspired. But I loved that. But like the point is to be invited to play with the best players or any players. Cause you'll just get better and better. And that's what I'm like trying to discipline myself to do now.
Speaking of discipline, I feel like discipline is a very key part of who you are. You are very disciplined, I feel like. Is that true?
Yes, I'm very, very disciplined. I think that probably is my upbringing. I come from like a very, a family of really great work ethic. I'm tunnel vision when it comes to something. And that can be bad too, because you can miss things, you know?
What was your family life like growing up?
My family's super close. And so I was actually kind of the loner in my family, like the creative, which is actually, I highly recommend being a creative child, because everyone would just start to be like, no, that's just Caroline. She just does what she wants. She just goes off by herself. So it actually worked out well for me.
Do you have a bunch of siblings?
I do. Yeah. I have three siblings. I have two sisters, and one brother. And, I just think they're a very close, very motivated, like type A group of people, which, is probably where I got my discipline from.
Yeah. Where do you fall in birth order?
I'm the oldest.
You're the oldest. Okay. See, I would have thought you're the youngest.
Really? Wait, do you have brothers and sisters?
I have one older sister, but I feel like the youngest one is usually the one who like floats around and does whatever they want and doesn't feel like the pressure to do, but I guess you do have that discipline. So you just put it towards like music and your.
Yeah. And I think creativity saved me from like, being the typical older child. Cause for a while, I think I was more like the perfectionist, and I still have a lot of perfectionism. But I think I was more like a typical older child. And then at some point, my creativity took over. So I have a mixed personality.
Okay. So you also seem like, to me, you seem like a really like natural, pure soul. But I also feel like in your music, you talk a lot about the sexy side of life. Like you like to get down with the sexy side, which I love. So talk to me about that. Like, are you just a super like feeling person? And how did you know that your fiance was the one? Because like one of your songs, you're like, I think it's called All the Boys.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm friends with all the boys, but I make love to you. And I'm like, oh my gosh, go Caroline. Yes. Yes, ma'am. Okay. Steven Emerson.
And that's funny. I actually wrote that song a few years ago before I met my fiance. And I originally wrote that song, about my sister, because my sister's like this super outgoing, more extroverted, loves social situations and parties, and that, you know, she's just much better at all that stuff than me. And I would see that she was like friends with all the boys and all the boys wanted her. And I was like, how cool is that? That like all the boys want you, but like you choose one. And I was like, that's such a like sexy idea for a song. So that's where that song came from. But I do, it's funny because especially artists like Jewel early on and Faith Hill and Shania Twain, just women who are not afraid to express like the spectrum of human emotion and
intimacy. That's a great point, Caroline, because like I feel like I grew up kind of conservative. I have super wonderful open-minded parents, but like I've been openly talking about like having sex with people, you know? Like I was kind of, it's kind of nerve-wracking to put that out there. So I was very impressed when you're like talking about it in such a beautiful way. Like you're explaining.
Yeah, and it is it's interesting. There's a lot of thoughts that are coming to my mind about this because I also grew up relatively conservative. My mom is very Catholic. And I actually think there's something beautiful and kind of a lost art about a certain aspect of conservatism, which is that like there is value, like great value in intimacy and love, and that like it should be placed with great care. And I think that like some of those values are, I think they really are important, and like to raise your kids that way. I think some of that has been lost a little bit, but at the same time, you want to be able to express yourself as an artist, like the full spectrum of, you know, things that you only share with one person, then you end up sharing in your music because that's part of your emotional life. So it is kind of a funny thing. And then other people are able to see it and feel that for themselves. But I think it's really healthy for men and women to see that kind of, because I feel like there's so much sexuality expressed in music as very, just in a different energy, like in an aggressive energy or in a casual energy or in like, especially with men, or in a like come get me energy, which is also really fun. And I do that a lot too. But I think expressing like the intimacy of real love and like what that actually feels like and seeing a woman express that, like I remember seeing Faith Hill's Breathe music video. And it's just like so beautiful to see. And especially as a young girl, of course you want to be beautiful like Faith Hill, but there's also this, like you can see how she feels, like how that love makes her feel. And I think it's good for young girls to see that instead of like a more aggressive sexual energy that I feel like is very prevalent now. So,
I get that totally. And you actually have a song called Intimacy where you did a whole dance number too. So what was this releasing? Was this happening when you met your fiance or were you just coming in to yourself? Like
I've always written love songs way before I met my fiance. I was writing love songs. I don't know. I've always been super romantic that way. Like I can write them from other people's experiences. I can write them from movies. Like I could write them dreaming about.
You're romantic.
I'm very, very romantic. And intimacy was fun because after I wrote, and that's actually about being like afraid to open up, like afraid of intimacy and afraid of that vulnerability. But that was the first time that I'd ever danced in a music video. And that was so fun. I just knew I wanted to, when I finished that song, I was like, I have to do a dance. I don't know why, what made me think of that. And that's a really cool music video, very different for me that I'm really proud of.
I love that you pushed yourself in that way, that you're just like, I just want to dance. I've never done this for recording. I've only done it for fun or myself. And like, and you're really good at dancing.
Thank you. I actually love dancing. And I dance a little in my new music video, Come In. There's like a cool dance in the second half of it. Definitely.
In, but don't make yourself comfortable. Like you're like sassy. What happens to the ones that you kick out? Because it sounds really intense. Like when you're like over a guy, it's like, you don't want to be that guy when you're done. I see what you're saying in that song. What happens? What is the aftermath of being in your roadkill?
Oh my God. I don't know. You'd have to ask other people. I think I'm just a 0 or 100 person. Like I'm either all in or like you don't do this.
Okay. So you're dead.
I know that can come off as like really harsh and cold. Again, this is why one of my nicknames is Barbaraline. But that's how I am. I'm just either like 100% or like I just don't care that much.
But at least people always know where you stand. You know, I'd rather have that. Yeah. Not confusing. You're not making people mind read.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I'm the same way. I over communicate so much and I like tell everything how I feel constantly. I mean, not the same way. I'm sure we don't operate the same, but like I am very much like, here are my feelings. This is how I feel. And that's it. Like, I'm not going to make a guess. I'm just going to tell you.
And it's nice then, because I think when you're able to do that, when you're aware enough to do that, then people can give you another perspective that actually really helps.
Yeah.
I just think a lot of people might be intimidated by that and be like, oh, okay. You know, but then when someone does, I think that's what was really different for me about my fiance is then.
Yeah. I wonder what made him be the one.
Oh my gosh. Everything. He's so wonderful. So I've been really career focused for a really long time. And I mean, I had a couple relationships, but like, I never really dated. I never really was focused that way. Like, in fact, I kind of thought like, I'm never going to get married. Like, I'm just going to be a musician. I'm just going to be committed to this. Like, I'll have my relationships when and if they come and whatever. And so even though I was really romantic, I'd kind of like, I was very tunnel vision career oriented. And, just literally, Nick just like fell in my life out of the blue during the pandemic. I could tell you like the whole sequence of events that caused it to happen, but it's such, actually, I will tell you some of the sequence of events. Okay. So cute. I love love.
Okay. I do too.
But, his mom, okay. Like a friend of his mom, hi, a friend of his mom showed his mom my music and she started following me. And one day she just randomly sent one of my videos to Nick and just wrote like, I just like see this as the kind of girl that you're going to end up with. And isn't that crazy? And then Nick was like, okay, there's a, you know, pretty singer, whatever. Thanks, mom. Whatever. Didn't think about it. And then over the next few months, like I kept popping up, in like his friend group, or I don't know, he would like see my name or my face or whatever. And long story short, he found out that we had a mutual friend. And so he was like, will you set me up with, will you try to have me meet Caroline? And so this friend that we have started texting me and said, you know, cause at first she was like, I don't know, Caroline doesn't really date. She's like super career focused. She's always on tour. I don't know if that's going to happen, blah, blah. And she was like, but you know what? You might be the only person that Caroline might actually like. So then she got really into it and she started texting me like, I know who you're going to marry. I know your husband, blah, blah. And I was,
this is, yeah. You are so in sync with your like source. I'm telling you.
Well, wait till you hear the rest of the story. Cause I really wasn't, I was like, whatever. Like I literally could not have been less interested. And this is why I just have so much faith that when something's right, you almost cannot mess it up, because I literally did everything I could to ignore my friend and Nick for maybe like 2.5 solid months. And finally she was like, can I just give this guy your number? Like, I'm so sick of trying to do this. I'm so sick of
trying to set you up on a date.
Yeah. And, then he started bothering me and blah, blah. And so finally I'm just going to meet this person once so I can just tell Jane I did it. She won't think I'm a horrible person.
Did you like the way he texted with you? Like, were you feeling it when he was texting, or was it kind of like,
I wasn't in that place. Like I wasn't even remotely interested.
Did you think it was cute, some pictures?
I didn't even, she sent me pictures of him. I didn't like look twice. Literally, like,
no,
like,
feeling.
Nothing. And so then I literally did it as like a last, just cross off the checklist and then be done with this, so this person doesn't bother me anymore. Tyler, can you tell him? Sorry. And so finally I was like, I'll meet this person one day. And we met and that was kind of it. I swear. It wasn't like love at first sight, but it was like, we were best friends, like right at just like talking for hours and hours and hours and hours, and just fell in love very quickly after that. And like God could not have, if you scripted like the perfect person for me, you could not come up with this person.
What's he like?
Well, he's a sailor, like sailing boats.
Stop it.
So yeah. So he sails around the world offshore.
Are you going to go with him?
He doesn't do it as much anymore. He used to do these Volvo around the world races. So now he does like shorter, smaller races, cause those were really, really intense. And he did they're like year long races where you literally sail from like Africa to Spain, Spain to wherever, like just around the whole world, you're offshore.
You guys are both super abstract in your life plans, which I love.
Yeah. So he's a sailor. He's a perfect blend. Like, I would need someone exactly like this. Like, he's a perfect blend of very smart and very emotionally aware, but also super sane and practical. Mm. And like, that's a very hard blend to find in a man, because normally like the really smart, manly, stable, practical men are not like
emotional,
willing to, yeah, exactly. And so he's just like a perfect blend of that for me. And he's just has the biggest heart. I mean, I could go on about him forever. He's the best. I love him so much. I felt, as my dad said, I folded like a cheap suit. I just fell so hard. I really found the one. I'm so lucky. Yeah. Yeah.
That's so awesome. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to wrap up soon. I love talking to you. When you look back on your life and you are Jimmy Buffett at 75 years old, reflecting back on your career, what do you hope it played out like? Maybe not exactly play by play, but what do you hope the general feeling of your life has been?
Oh my gosh, these are such great questions.
Thank you.
I hope that I can say that I really fulfilled my potential as a musician and a creative person, and that I inspired people along the way, and not just my audience, but hopefully other musicians and other creative people that I got to collaborate with, that I enriched their life and inspired them in some way. And I hope I made a mark that way, like in the music community, as an artist. And then I hope that I really adventured properly. Like, and 'cause that's something that Nick has really opened me up to, is that like there's more to life than just like constantly working towards bettering yourself, that like there's so much richness in the world. And if you have the opportunity to travel like we do, I spent most of last year in New Zealand because of him. Oh my God, it was unbelievable.
Doing in New Zealand.
Okay. So like 6 weeks after we met, he had to move to New Zealand for a year to sail in the America's Cup. And New Zealand was like the only country that didn't have COVID, and the borders were closed, but there was exemptions for like spouses and wives and families of the sailors. So I got to go over, and all my tours had been canceled. I was supposed to be touring with Lucas Nelson. Like, I'm telling you, this whole thing was such a God thing. But I got to go over because I had nothing to do. I was like, I'm not going to be touring this year, so I may as well, if I'm going to make a record, I can make it in New Zealand. And, I just moved to New Zealand, and we stayed there for 7 months, and it was so unbelievable.
But you, for 7 months in New Zealand with him, were y'all just frolicking in like mad bliss of love in the most beautiful country in the world?
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what it was. And it is so gorgeous there. To
build your relationship on.
Yeah, and it was, because I didn't know one person there. Like, Nick was the only, I literally like moved across the world and Nick was the only person I knew. Like, I'm very lucky that I was sure about him, you know, like, 'cause it sounds like a reckless thing to do, but I was like, nothing was going to stop me. And, it was, because we didn't have our families, friends, any, like no distractions. We just got to know each other so well.
And you got to live normal life, 'cause there was no COVID. Did you just get to like move freely about the country?
It was, I mean, so lucky. The one place that really had no COVID.
And like, if they have the most beautiful, like clean place in the world. It's like super uninhibited in so many areas.
Yeah. Well, that's what's so cool about New Zealand. First of all, the people are so, you don't realize like how uptight you are as an American until you go somewhere else. And then you're like, why do I talk so fast? And why am I always like, you know what I mean?
Like, what's they're the just hurry? So...
Yeah, they just don't take themselves as seriously, and they have the best sense of humor. They remind me, because I'm half Australian, my mom's Australian, so they remind me of my Australian cousins. It's just like so cool and down to earth and like practical and just fun. And then it's, I think part of the reason that it's still so beautiful is because the population is so small. Like, there's only 5 million people in the entire country. And so there's, you can be in Auckland, which is where we were based, and you can drive an hour in any direction and be where there are no people, like on a beach with no people. And you just can't have that in America anymore. So it's really cool. So beautiful there.
What an experience. Like, what a moment in time.
It was. Yeah, and I'm about to, so my next album, I don't want to give away too much, but my next album is a lot about my time in New Zealand, and a lot of the videos were filmed in New Zealand, and I have a song coming out next month that has a lot of, like, handmade iPhone footage of Nick and I and our adventures in New Zealand, so.
Oh my God. I love it, Caroline.
Yeah.
I love the way you're living your life. This is so inspiring, and I hope anyone listening can have a little faith that, like, trusting your gut, trusting your passion, trusting your intuition, knowing your priorities, as you said, can really guide you to a beautiful life, and like knowing where you want to go, but then, like you also said, holding it openly and letting the pieces fall. Like, that takes a lot of faith to live like that, you know?
It does. And there's so much that we can't control. So it's hard, especially as a control freak. But I do really strongly believe that there is no one who couldn't better their life by paying more attention to their inner world and making, like, their happiness and fulfillment a higher priority on in their life. Like, there's no one who can't have a better day today if they do that. And I know there's so many people living so many different challenges and different things, but, like, everyone can do that. And I think it pays off.
So I always end, you've kind of, like, been inspiring this whole time, but I always end with leave your light. And it's super open-ended. What do you want people to know?
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm going to speak to myself too, because I always, it's not like I know this and everybody else does it. Like, I'm trying to learn this every day, but I really wish that people knew and that I knew all the time that we are fundamentally good and right. And we should operate from that place instead of that something is wrong with us and that we're lacking. We constantly have to be making up for it, that we're good and right and we're meant to have a beautiful life and we're meant to feel good and we're meant to trust ourselves and we're allowed to trust ourselves. Like, I always try to remind myself of that. Because I do. I think inherently we are good and right.
Caroline, you're so inspired and wise. You must have
been so sweet.
You must be a very old soul. You've been around for many lifetimes, I can tell. You know a lot of stuff. You've got a lot of wisdom.
Thank you very much. I love this talk. This is so cool.
I loved it too, and I'm so glad to get to know you on this level, and I'm sure our paths will continue to cross because
yeah, please. So awesome. I would love to meet you in person. Let's do it.
You come to Nashville often?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I live in Nashville part-time.
Oh, okay. When you're here, just hit me up.
I will.
I'm here all the time.
Awesome. I'm going to be there next week.
Well, we should hang out.
I would love that.
I love that. Bye.